Okay, so what I wanted to just, you know, spend about 10 minutes doing is we like to follow up the conference with a white paper, so we want to sort of recap some of the things that we heard yesterday, give a little bit of the state of what's going on in the progress of cancer. And then after today, a full sort of write-up on the meeting that, you know, has gone through will be sent out to all the participants. So if anybody has any comments, we're happy to take any suggestions or comments on any of the material that was presented these 2 days, and we'll incorporate all this into the white paper. So, sorry. So I'm Mike Rice, principal at Define Health. I co-lead the oncology practice with Jeff Bachman. So I work in many of the areas that he does. I do a lot of the work in heme malignancies and immuno-oncology and sort of the next wave, what is going on with non-traditional modalities for managing patients with cancer. So we started off yesterday with a keynote speech from Greg Simon from the Biden Foundation that talked on the progress that they made with the Moonshot program. And really about all the different public-private collaborations that they had started to help cross information across the silos to overcome some of the road barriers that they see in progressing cancer treatments towards the cure, and, you know, outlined a bunch of initiatives that they have, you know, started a bunch of different initiatives towards to address them. So why it's important is that, you know, the toolbox for managing patients with cancer has become incredibly complex, both with, you know, traditional chemotherapy, radiation, targeted pathway inhibitors, antibodies, and a whole, you know, plethora of immuno-oncology mechanisms used as monotherapy or as in combination across the space. So, you know, much of the conversation yesterday we had about, well, how do we, you know, manage all these clinical trials that are now recruiting, for over 1,000 combination trials, whether they're IO or non-IO or combinations of them, and some of them are, you know, double and triple therapy combinations with novel agents. So, you know, much of it is how do we sort of make this more efficient process? Is there a way that we can introduce things like common reference arms of trials rather than repeating reference arms for each trial that is done? And if there's any way that we can manage data across trials and facilitate more collaboration. While, you know, I just talked earlier today, you know, we heard it was all this morning was, you know, the perception that it's all about immuno-oncology. It is, but still the vast majority of the market is still what we consider non-IO, and many of these agents you can sort of debate, is it really having a, you know, working through its intended mechanism, or is it also using IO approaches as well? But really what's driving growth are what we are considering IO, classic IO molecules. Much of them are the antibodies or checkpoint inhibitors. But not far behind that, we see, you know, cell therapies that are being expected to be launched in the next year or two from a couple different, developers, probably, you know, Kite and Novartis first and maybe Juno second, and then, you know, and it may evolve to a more off-the-shelf allogeneic cell therapy approach. But there's potential growth for not only traditional or conventional therapeutics, but we also see all these sort of non-conventional approaches that are coming to fruition. And we're going to discuss many of these in the panels later today. We touched on microbiome yesterday, these have come to the forefront of therapeutics. Okay. So then, you know, what I touched on, we had a panel on the future of non-IO therapies. Are they being neglected? You know, there's a lot of promising agents. Some of them have therapeutic profiles that look like IO, you know, are on par of IO, but they don't seem to be getting the investment or traction that other areas, because everybody's trying to figure out how do we manage this very disruptive and transformative combination of checkpoint inhibitors and these other non-traditional modalities. But still, again, going back to the market is predominantly not non-IO, and the pipeline as well is still non-IO. And, you know, there are significant investments that are going on in the space. However, they often happen late after proof of concept, whereas investment into the immuno-oncology classes of drugs have become very early pre-proof of concept. Then we had another panel that really focused on the checkpoint inhibitors largely and the more what we call conventional IO agents. And, you know, the question was, you know, does everybody need a PD-1, PD-L1, or is there another way to be more efficient? Because if there are 14 PD-1s in development, three on the market, they're consuming a lot of patients to just develop the same class of drugs, and that's unprecedented in oncology. We've never had so much competition of one drug class. And what you look is that what you see is that the developers, the first to market products have really, expanded, or they're looking at just about every indication that they can. And many of the follow-on PD-1s are going for the same validated patient population. So there's a lot of overinvestment in the same patient population over and over, and patients are becoming a scarcity. But, you know, single-agent CPIs have, showed tremendous advances, particularly for the lucky patients that have long, durable responses to them. And so the space is getting really segmented based on PD-1 positivity, other biomarkers like microsatellite instability and mutational burden. But, you know, we still need something beyond this. And good thing is that we're developing multi-modalities, some of these the non-traditional approaches that we had discussed that can help, improve, trafficking, can make a cold tumor inflamed, can directly target immune cells or bring them together. And, at the end of the day, it's going to need a figure out how to optimally use this tool bag and bring everything together to make the benefit of immuno-oncology more universal to across patient segments. So just a cartoon of way we see things maybe emerging is that it looks like the anti-PD-1s are going to be foundational unless something comes along that can displace that. However, with such a body of evidence that's coming around, it's going to be difficult to displace that. And then there will be other things that will be added onto it to modify the tumor microenvironment, to, inflame tumors, make cold tumors hot, to, target cancer versus normal tissue. And then other things to just potentiate and amplify the immune response. And then, at the end of the day, and largely because the delivery of cellular therapies and more complex therapeutics are more expensive and more difficult to distribute, that, largely they'll be sort of reserved to be added on top of all these until some more data comes out on, specific patient populations where they could be used earlier. So, we're keeping our eyes on not just the doublet novel combinations, but what's going on with the triplet therapies. And, that leads also to the issue is, as we make immuno-oncology approaches more effective, we're also changing the adverse event spectrum and the tolerability of these drugs and really kind of really changing the supportive care landscape. So, from a developer or a patient perspective there's a different spectrum of needs. But from a industry standpoint, there could be a different opportunity for supportive care agents. So non-conventional modalities. So we just did a quick PubMed search, and we saw, a spike in microbiome, the adoptive cellular therapies and neoantigens. So that's indicating that, there's investment in this space and that there's, we're passing some points of proof of concept. And really, when we look at the spectrum, we see a lot of deal activity going on in bispecific antibodies, the BiTE space and the CART space. And it's really, we're looking at that as a sort of an evolution of the biologic spectrum, just be, you know, developing more specific and more complex products. And, you know, at the end of the day, there may be an allogeneic off-the-shelf CAR T product or other adoptive cellular therapy products that might incorporate all the features that deal with tumor microenvironment and inflaming tumors and potentiating effects with cytokines and things like that. So there may be a one product that might be more universally available than the current stage of development. And the neoantigens, a lot of investment, a lot of startups in that space. You know, still is a an emerging area, and the companies are figuring out how to best productize the promise of neoantigens and deliver personalized medicine for patients that aren't particularly benefiting from checkpoint monotherapy alone. And then also yesterday we talked a lot about the tumor microenvironment, other ways to potentiate the innate immune system, and then the microbiome panel that we had. And that was actually, a very interesting educational panel talking about, what is the state of art of understanding the microbiome and dysbiosis, and how companies are looking at developing therapies from, sort of replacing the microbiota with spores, with, adding in small molecules that potentiate them, that, to add in, antigens that activate their effects. And then we had another panel talked about, it was data. I thought it was going to be about big data, but it was really about interpreting clinical trial results and the conundrum of trying to interpret particularly small trials, early stage trials, to understand if there's really something going on there or not. Can you believe the results of a single arm trial? And, how big does the effect need to be to really think that you have something, you're not being misled? And so there's a lot of confounding, events along the way and biases that really make the decision to invest or not in a particular program or move it forward somewhat challenging. And then we kind of brought it all to reality with the lung cancer panel. So it was the only tumors-focused panel that we had yesterday. And what's really apparent is that this is a space that immuno-oncology is really transforming. The the unmet needs are still incredibly high in lung cancer. However, it's being basically segmented into, it's not just small cell lung cancer anymore. It's a bunch of different diseases underneath that umbrella that's now being segmented for treatment approaches. And in some cases now we have checkpoint inhibition that has displace the use of conventional chemotherapy. So I think it's a big win for patients, and it's an area that looks like it's accelerating. And from a market perspective, you can see it's really kind of transformed the space from being, traditional chemotherapy dominated to now the growth is really being stimulated by the potential of checkpoint inhibitors, particularly PD-1, PD-L1. Okay, so just to wrap up the deal perspective, again this year, immuno-oncology deals have dominated the space. They're all the ones that are wrapped in the red boxes. But there has been more non-IO deals this year than last year. So, I don't know if this is a trend that's going to continue, that, now as, pharma and large biotech company has distribute their IO assets in their portfolio, now they're looking at synergies with non-IO, and they're doing more significant deals out in that space as well. This shows a little graph showing the deal activity. And even though traditional IO, the checkpoint inhibitors, the small molecules have been very significant last year, when we break that out by what sort of deals, how they fall out in the different deals, there's a lot going on in bispecifics. So that seems like it's the next space where, everybody needs one in a tool bag. They are, after Blincyto, it looks like that they're developing proof of concept, at least as T-cell engagers, but also as bifunctional antibodies that, bring in, dual targets into one antibody and everything. And then there's still, significant investment going on in the vaccine space. I think the new antigens are kind of wrapped in there. and adopt the cellular therapy. So that's it. So we have a great agenda today. I'm lucky to moderate the first two panels on aging and cancer and treating the exceptional responder. And then Jeff Bachman will moderate a panel on virotherapy, oncolytic viruses, and then we'll talk a little bit about innovative ways to run clinical trials. Some of that I think we'll be touching on the first couple panels of, you know, N-of-1 trials and how do you, you know, identify the patient that's really likely to really respond to a therapy and run a smaller focused trial around it. And then I hope everybody stays because I think we started out Cancer Progress last year with the payer value panel, but this year we saved the best for last, and so we didn't want to depress you up front. So anyway, so that's a quick recap of yesterday and what's going on today.